This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And a good Friday, and it is a football Friday, which is something we've been, you know, desperate for a very, very, very long time. And football's back yesterday, and we can't wait to discuss it. We're going to spend a lot of time. We're going to do a frenzy, and Paul Feinbaum, and RJ Bell, and all those things. And, of course, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on DCR appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we'll get to the football, I promise you, but we'd be remiss, we'd be foolish, especially here in all places of New York, not to start out the show with what today is. And today is a solemn day, and it's a day of remembrance, and it's a day of just, you know, pain. And it was awful 19 years ago. It still feels difficult today, and that's where we start. Not 9/11. Now, next year, Yankees Mets will be playing on this day, which will be the 20-year anniversary, and probably very surreal, and it'll be 20 years, but it's 19 years today. And I got to tell you, Chris, we're going to get into sports. We're going to do that all morning, obviously, but we have to start the show here. And, you know, it's 19 years ago, and it doesn't feel that long ago. It's still, the wound is still very much fresh and open for me.
Well, it is, Dave, and it's something that we'll never forget. And you said it perfectly. I think today is a day of remembrance. We remember the victims that lost their lives in that cowardly attack, and we remember the sacrifices that the first responders made to try to get people out of harm's way at Ground Zero. Like, this is something that we'll never forget, and we can't thank them enough for what they did on that day and what they did in the wake of that tragedy in terms of trying to get this city back on its feet. I remember when that happened, I was in college, and I was in a frenzy trying to call my parents and make sure that they were okay, and calling the rest of my family that was up in the tri-state area and making sure that everybody was okay. And I just remember in that time, there was this overwhelming sense of solidarity and unity throughout our country. We found ourselves in the middle of a war, and it felt like everybody had one another's back. And I look at where we're at now as a country, finding ourselves in the middle of a war against racism and inequality, and it doesn't feel like we have that same type of solidarity, which we all recognize is what's necessary in order for us to win this particular war. And so I'm a little bit disappointed. Again, I don't want to take away from the remembrance of what happened in 9/11 and the sacrifices and those that lost their lives, but I can't help but think of where we're at as a country right now. Think about the sacrifices that those folks made 19 years ago, and think about where we're at now. And I just feel like it's a sad state of affairs, because we should be much better than what we really are.
Well, because you saw how strong this country is when it's unified. I mean, that was, and this is a day, and we all know exactly where we are, where we were on this day. You know, I was up at training camp. I was talking to my wife this morning. She was actually 10 blocks away working when this happened. This is a day that we can't forget. Mm-mm. Because, you know, the people that lost loved ones and friends, the, you know, almost 2,800 people that were killed in New York, the 184 people that died at the Pentagon, the 40 in Pennsylvania, we can't forget that, because they're still dealing with the pain of that day. And so are the first responders that continue to deal with the ramifications of being the ones that headed into the buildings to try to save lives.
Probably knowing what their ultimate demise would be, and regardless of that, still running into those buildings. That's what we remember, right? The amount of heroism that we saw that day. There's a piece that ESPN did, Tom Rinaldi voiced, called The Man in the Red Bandana. I don't know if you've seen it, who was a kid who had just graduated college. He went to BC. He was a big-time college lacrosse player, and he was known to his family and friends as he would walk around with a red bandana all the time. And he was up there at some investment company, and people, after they got out, weeks later, months later, said, who helped you? Just some guy with a red bandana. And they never knew. And I think his name was Wells Crowther. And they never knew. And then they put this documentary together about how many people he saved. And there were so many people like that, that ran into those buildings, that saved, that helped people 19 years ago today. And that's the kind of thing that we absolutely cannot forget today.
You can't forget it, because there are people still to this day that are dealing with the consequences of running into those buildings, of being the first responders. I was reading an article this morning. At least 18,000 people have been diagnosed with a 9/11 related cancer. Mm-hmm. 18,000 people, Dave. Mm. That are dealing with the ramifications still today, 19 years later.
Yeah. And you've seen those and remember, they told them that you didn't need to wear a mask and everything was fine, and how awful that was. But you've seen what Jon Stewart has done and gone in front of Congress and you know, won battles. And it's still, I mean, this will never go away. This will, you know, there are people, my dad's generation, my mom's generation, who look back and said, you know, D-Day or December 7, 1941, Pearl Harbor, any of those things, that's our day, right? You know, September 11, 2001, that is our day. And we have to remember it, because if you don't remember it, then you forget, and then it doesn't move on from generation to generation, because we're not going to be here forever. So it is important today to discuss. And I was actually pleased last night, Ben came home, and I've asked him in the past, how much 9/11 stuff do you do at school? And he said, none. And this is the first year that he came home and he had to write out 30 questions that he wanted answered about 9/11. And we went over it and we really kind of dissected little pieces. And he said, were you scared? I said, we were terrified. I said that we were absolutely, New York especially, was terrified what was coming next. You know, what kind of trouble were we going to be in? Everyone was scared to fly. So I am glad that at least they're teaching it in school now, so that the next generation who wasn't here for that day understands what that was like.
Yeah, I was actually proud of you know, Milo's school and Ella's school. They actually, you know, did a 9/11 tribute, and all the kids, you know, their assignment was you watch the 9/11, and he's only 5 years old, and she's almost four. But I mean, they this morning watched the 9/11 tribute and asked a bunch of questions, and I answered the questions. So I mean, it's something. You're right. You're 100% right. This is something that can't ever be forgotten. It's got to be passed on, you know, generation to generation.
Well, it's a defining moment, right? Like I think you said, Rick, that it showed how strong we can be as a country when we all come together. And I think that's important to always remember, because we're capable of being able to overcome a lot of things when we come together, when we unite, when we stand in solidarity. And that's just one of those lessons that you always have to have, because you know that you're capable of being able to do it. Once you do something, you know that you can do it again, no matter what you're up against, no matter how dark it may seem, no matter how difficult it may be, we know that we're up for the task. And with that tragedy that happened, I mean, you saw the best of what America could be. You did. But in, you know, recent events, we've also seen the worst of what America can be. And that's why I can't get past, you know, the solidarity that we showed then and not being able to show that now with what we're going through with the fight for equality. And watching the game last night and listening to the fans boo during the moment of silence for social justice and a show of solidarity between the Texans and the Chiefs, that to me was something that was inexplicable. It was something that was inexcusable. I just don't understand what there was to boo about in that moment. It wasn't like the players were taking a knee. It wasn't anything like that. It was just the players locking arms and the NFL acknowledging the fight for social justice and recognizing that it's going to take all of us in order to win this particular battle in this country. The fact that the fans in Arrowhead Stadium would take it to that place where they felt like they should boo the players, that to me is something that we all need to express outrage about, because that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that was just stupidity at its finest. I mean, that made absolutely zero sense to anybody.
You know what it did for me, Rick? It helped me realize that this was never about the flag. It was never about the anthem. It was never about the military. This was about people using whatever they could in order to be dismissive of the overarching point that Colin Kaepernick and others were trying to make about race in this country. That's what it was. Because at that point, when the crowd at Arrowhead Stadium decided to boo those players when they did that, that's just saying we don't want to hear it. We want to be willfully ignorant. We don't want to acknowledge the problem that this country has with race. Just we don't want the messaging from you guys. We want you guys to shut up and play football.
Yeah, just go away. Just go out there and play football, because
we don't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah, but it just highlights your stupidity, in my opinion. Like, you don't even know what you're booing. Like, I mean, you have no idea what you're booing. Like, it was a sign of, I mean, it was a show of solidarity. It was unity between, you know, two teams. Yeah, they're two teams that, you know, as soon as the ball kicks off, they're going to be, you know, trying to kill each other, because that's the nature of football. But in that moment, it was black, it was white, it was, I mean, you name it. It was everyone standing arm in arm to show that, you know, this is, we are unified as human beings. Like that wasn't, you know, kneeling for the flag or anything else. I don't know. I don't just understand. Like that just,
yeah,
that for me is
to,
you have no idea
know,
what you're doing.
Wouldn't you love to know the people that boo? Like what's your rationale behind booing? That we're saying?
I don't think they know. I don't even think if you asked them, I don't even think they would know. Like why are you booing? I don't know.
Just because the guy next to me booed, but why?
Maybe.
Why is the one guy why is the guy that starts to boo? What is the rationale behind it that players and people are showing that they're unified?
Because you're
all
ignorant.
It was?
Well, because you're ignorant. Because you're willfully ignorant at that point. Because you have no idea what's going on.
So you're just a sheep that's following the other sheep?
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the things to boo, you chose that moment. Where
yeah,
it was about let's lock arms in solidarity as human beings. That's what we're gonna boo.
That's what
really?
That's what I can't figure out. Like in that moment, what are you opposed to? Like what are you against? Like what? Why did you feel the need to have that negative reaction? You know what I'm saying?
I don't think they could answer that question.
That kind of feeling for you, where you felt like you had to boo in that moment.
I don't even think they could answer that question.
Well, they can't answer that question and feel comfortable with the answer that's going to come out of their mouth. That's the reality of it, Rick. That's what it is. Let's just call it what it is. Racism exists in America, and there are some people that like it this way. They want to maintain this level of privilege. They're not interested in equality. That's what you're saying to me. That's what you're saying to black and brown Americans when you decide to boo in that moment. I know we'll get to it later, but that's why I loved what the Miami Dolphins did yesterday in coming out with that video.
And
because
you wonder why they love their head coach.
It's not about, you know, performative allyship. It's not about, okay, being seen trying to be an advocate for black and brown Americans in this fight. It's not about, you know, it's not about the next performance. It's not about the next gesture. It's not about fluff. It's about doing things that actually lead to the change that we want to see. And listen, man, in the wake of George Floyd, you would just think that we would be in a different place, in a different space when it comes to these types of demonstrations by the players before the games. And yet we're still at the point where it's something that's polarizing. And that's the part that I can't understand. I can't get my mind around.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's disappointing. It's saddening because I want to believe in the best of this country. I believe this country has the ability, the potential to live up to the ideals that are spelled out in the Constitution. We have that in us. You can't say we didn't have it in us because I seen it on display in 9/11 in 2001. I saw it. So I know it exists. But we're not going to be able to do that, Dave, when it comes to every single issue that affects every single American until we all take it personally when it comes to this particular fight, when it comes to this particular war.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part. I think that really is for me the saddest part. We're still having these conversations, and they're important conversations. To what they did yesterday,
It'll never make sense.
It doesn't make sense because it's ignorant. If the intent was like I want to show people that I am opposed to, you know, social equality and everything else. Why would you choose that moment? It doesn't even make any sense to boo that. If that was the message you were trying to send. Like, that wasn't the time to boo. Like, I don't even understand what you were trying to accomplish in that situation.
We can analyze it and dissect it till we're blue in the face. It's never going to make sense to us. We're never going to be able to rationalize.
But I can understand why
the mind of people like that.
I can understand why Canty gets frustrated because, you know, 19 years ago, to how we opened the show, you saw when this country is unified, how powerful and how strong we can be, and it shouldn't take a terrorist attack or something like that to bring us together. Like that shouldn't be the reason why we all come together as a country.
Hmm.
I mean, it doesn't need to be a tragedy that brings us all together. You've shown everyone what we're capable of doing, and that we got to get closer to that as opposed to where we're at now, where we're so divided.
Oh, it couldn't be more divided. But that's a long time ago, and you say it shouldn't take a tragedy, and yeah, of course you're right, it shouldn't. But I think in many ways it does.
But that's why we say never forget, Dave.
That's right.
It was a long time ago, but that's why we say never forget. We can't forget the lessons that we learned in that time, and that's including seeing the American spirit on display and seeing us all unite, come together in solidarity to stand up against a common enemy.
And I don't you remember how proud you were to be an American back then? Like, I remember in the days after that, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, it doesn't matter your political affiliation. When George Bush came to New York City and took that megaphone and spoke to everyone out there that was working and digging through that rubble, we all felt this tremendous sense of pride. And I don't think a lot of us feel that today.
You know what, David? It's interesting that you bring that up, because I remember feeling that. And I remember Al Groh stood up in front of my team when I was at the University of Virginia, and he said, we have to be a part of getting America back on its feet, and we're going to play our small role with sports and athletics, and you know how that always brings folks together. And I remember the following game after 9/11, after that tragedy took place, we had the decal of the American flag on the back of our helmets. And I can remember feeling so proud in that moment to be able to put that helmet on with the American flag and run out of the tunnel and play a football game. You're absolutely right. It meant something. We all felt that level of patriotism, that sense of responsibility, of duty to help our country pick itself up and become become stronger than we were before the attack.
You know what you just said, Chris, is that's the most important thing, though, is, and I think that's why sports brings people together. And I think, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's because, you know, if you root for the Giants, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, how many times have you gone to a game? Like, I remember going to when the Mets made their run to the World Series. Like, I'm at those games and I'm high-fiving people. I mean, you know, buying beer. I've never met these people in my entire life. But it's, and we have, you know, we're both rooting for the same team. Rooting for the same team. But it's because we're rooting against the common enemy. Like in 9/11, we all had a common enemy, so we unified. Mm-hmm. I think what the players last night were trying to show you when they decided to have that moment where they all locked arms is, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are going up against the Houston Texans. We're supposed to be enemies. Like we're trying to, you know, Kansas City's trying to beat Houston. Kansas City Chiefs fans are rooting against the Houston Texans. They have a common enemy in that situation. But in that moment, they could push all that aside because, I mean, we're all human beings and we're all together. In that moment, you could push all that aside. Yeah, it's going to be a game and we're going to be going against each other. But in that moment, we're all one.
Ironically, I remember, I don't know if you guys remember who the Giants played the first game back. So it happened on 9/11, which was a Tuesday. And then the week right after that coming weekend, there were no games. And then the week after they played. The Giants played in Kansas City, right, ironically enough. And I will always remember the Giants taking the field, and we know what Kansas City Chiefs fans are. They're rabid. They're crazy. They're 75,000 fans. Huge standing ovation for the New York Giants. Huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the enemy coming into your building. Huge. Applauding them. Like, and it was so special and was so memorable to me. It's 19 years ago, and you know, now you look at where we are, where players are, you know, trying to unify last night, and you get, for whatever reason, we're not okay with that now.
But I think it's why at the end of playoff series, guys shake hands. Because, I mean, once all that stuff is put aside, the series is over. It's, I mean,
right,
because
there is ultimate respect, right?
Because you respect each other, yes. And I just don't, it frustrates me because I have no idea. I mean, I'm watching that game last night and I'm like, what are we trying to accomplish here with this booing? I don't understand. Like, you don't even know what, you obviously don't understand what the players are trying to accomplish by having this moment. You're just ignorant to it. And you just decided you're going to boo for no reason.
That's right. That's right. But you know what? That's what we saw. That from the current state of the NFL, of where we are now, because we haven't had a game since pre any of this stuff, the first taste you get as a fan is that. And you're disgusted by it.
I'd be interested to see what the Kansas City Chiefs do about that over the course of the weekend or before the next home game. Because they got to issue some kind of statement about what they want to be about as an organization. And if that's what we're choosing to represent, then our fans should be in lockstep with that. I mean, this is a fight that everybody should be on board with. Like Rick talks about it all the time. This is nothing controversial. Fighting for equality and fighting against racism is something that every American should try to be a part of in their own small way. This isn't something that should be polarizing, and yet it is. And so when you say you don't understand it, it doesn't make any sense to me, it makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense. There are some people that just aren't willing to go there. There's some people that want to maintain the way things are. They don't want to see change. They don't want to see equality. And it's sad. It really
is sad. And it's angering. if that's
but it's lazy. My point is it's lazy. Like, you're choosing to be ignorant. Like, the guy, the face of the NFL, the guy most responsible for bringing, I mean, and you raised the banner last night. The guy, the MVP of the Super Bowl, who brought you a championship, it was his idea to do it.
You're right.
The guy whose jersey you wear that you root for, who's the best
right.
player
who
in the NFL.
Revere, right.
That you
who
revere.
You revere, who's a walking god in Kansas City.
That would probably, that you would make the godfather of your children, if he was willing to do it, you're booing. And it was his idea. How stupid is that? I don't know, man. I just...
Yeah,
I was almost. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. I was almost
embarrassing. That's why, because it was embarrassing. Let's get to a couple calls on this. We'll break. We'll come back, and we'll start to break down some of the NFL. And boy, the Chiefs looked really, really good last night.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
right?
They did.
Let's go to Chris in Manhattan. They look great. Chris, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey guys, good morning. You know, you guys are having a very interesting conversation about humanity, and just in listening, you know, for about 10 minutes where you started, you know, with the unity. You know, that was shown on September the 11th and following, and then skipping forward to now, you know, where you have a certain segment of the population, you know, that is actually vocal, you know, in its displeasure, you know, of athletes, bringing forth, you know, this unifying gesture. Man, guys, that's humanity, man. I hate to say it. And the thing is, you know, and as an African-American, and I'm listening to, you know, some of the, is it frustration in your voice, Chris? Part of it
yes,
is.
Yeah, it's frustration.
Same person, frustration. The same person who's probably booing. When you get attacked by a foreign country, an outside entity, this is the same person who's going to want to be your tag team partner, who's going to want you to stand shoulder to shoulder, back to back. Who's going to want to jump in? You know, want to jump in your trench and say, "Hey, let's go, brother. Let's go fight them." Time out, man, my man. You've been kicking my behind for I don't know how long. Now all of a sudden, you know, we have this outside force, and now you want to be together. No, I don't think this. I hate to say it this way. I don't think this is the trench you want to jump in, because I'm gonna look at you first. Because at the end of the day, when all of this is over, I know I'm going to have to see you again. And isn't that something that Muhammad Ali said in, wasn't that the mid-60s?
Yeah.
In 2020?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, some of these things you're going to want to remember who's on what side of the line in peacetime. Because, no, man, nah, man, you can't jump in my boat when they're like, hey, they're coming for us. No, they're coming for you, Jack, because you can't get in this boat now.
But here's the thing, and I hear exactly what you're saying, but black and brown Americans have always believed in the best of what this country could be.
Exactly.
And despite all of the things that we've gone through, first of all, getting here before the inception of America, but all the things that we've gone through from then till now, you've had black and brown Americans fighting for this country in conflicts willingly because
That's
they
right.
believed in the best of what this country could be. They believed in the words that were spelled out in the Constitution, knowing full well that America didn't always live up to its end of the bargain in terms of how they treated us in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear exactly what you're saying, but when you go back to 9/11 and you see the unity and the solidarity and us working hand in hand.
Right, we can
do it. In order to get us back to some sense of normalcy, that's one of those things. It's like we're capable of doing that. And when you talk about the frustration in the black and brown voices that you hear, the frustration comes from the fact that we know America can be better, and yet we're choosing not to be. And that's the part that we can't get past, but that's why it's going to take all of us in order to move the needle closer to where we should be when it comes to equality. That's why it's going to take all of us. This is not the time to point fingers at other people. This is the time to stand up and say who we are, and probably just as important, who we're not.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to James in Jersey. James, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, how are you guys doing today? Before I get to my point, I just wanted to tell a quick story. I'm 25, so I remember 19 years ago, I was actually in first grade, my elementary school. And I'm in a small town called Palisades Park. So it's right across the GW, right next to Fort Lee, if you know the area. And as a little kid, you know, I'm just in school and I don't remember much, but I remember all the teachers running into my classroom to look out through the window. And I remember very vividly someone saying, you could see the plane right there. And as a seven-year-old, you know, you don't get what that means. But then later in the day, I found out what happened as my aunt came, picked me up early from school. And, you know, I saw the news, saw the TV, and that's when reality kind of hit. But not really, because as a kid, you think it's a movie or something. But to get to my quick point real quick, I myself personally wasn't shocked at the reaction in Kansas City. I understand what everyone's doing about unity, and it's great, but we're talking about Kansas City, Missouri. Probably, I've never been there personally, but if I had to assume it's probably one of a hot spot in racism in our country due to the fact that, I mean, that's where Mike Brown got shot. That's where you got Ferguson, and they're still struggling to get some clean water. So I understand why people are upset, but it's kind of just taking me a shock that people are shocked that it happened, the booing.
Yeah, but what do you? But here's the question. But here's the question. And maybe we shouldn't be shocked. What exactly are you booing? Like in that moment, what were you booing? No one was kneeling for the anthem. No one was disrespecting the flag. No one was. They were standing arm in arm together as human beings in a moment. Like what was was being disrespected in that moment?
It's just their pride being disrespected.
How? Like I said, James, really? I mean, tell it. What sense of their pride is being disrespected? That human beings are saying we stand together?
I mean, I'm not defending them at all.
No, I know you're not. I know you don't take that side, but we can't fathom what they're. It almost feels, Rick, like they, and thanks for the call, James, like they were so uninformed and ignorant that they were just booed because that's just what you do.
No, it's almost like they went to the game with the mindset that both teams would be on the field during the national anthem and there was going to be kneeling so they could boo. And the fact that only one person on Kansas City kneeled and Texas State in the Houston Texans stayed in their locker room, they had nothing to boo. So, okay, we'll choose this moment now to get this off our chests.
Right.
And then after they booed, they had a moment of cultural appropriation where they did the tomahawk chop as the Chiefs chant before they actually play the game.
You can't make it up.
You can't make it up,
Dave. You can't make it up.
You really can't. It's unbelievable.
It really is. I mean, you're right. I mean, you can't make it. It's like we're living in a big sitcom, right?
No, you can't make it up. You can't make it up. I mean, it's almost impossible.
Like, let's boo them for locking arms, and then immediately when that dies down, we will do the tomahawk chop.
Yeah, but it's almost like we're a caricature of who we really are.
Or is this who we really are?
I can't believe this is who we really are, Dave. I can't. Because I saw who we really are. I saw what I want to believe who we really are 19 years ago. That's why I don't want to say that's who we are now. And you always talk about it, Dave. Ignorance screams. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those moments where it's like it's louder than ever when you recognize those folks booing in the crowd had no idea what they were in opposition to. And really, when you think about it, there was nothing to be opposed to. We were supposed to be having a moment of unity, a moment of silence to stand in solidarity in the fight for social justice. How could anybody be against that?
But that's why today is so important. Because, you know, when you're having one of those days where it's just like, this country is a mess, we're so divided. You know, what's it going to take? Maybe it's just, this is how it's going to always be. This is the day where you can look back 19 years ago and say, and you can, it's a shining example of how great this country can be. It gives you hope.
It does. It does. You saw the worst of what the world could be 19 years ago today, right now. And then you saw the best of what this country could be moving forward. You're right. Mm-hmm. 100%.
All right, guys, let's get on the field. Last night, I mean, the Chiefs fell behind 7-0, and then they absolutely dominated. I thought that the Texans were brutal. I mean, their game plan was very strange. They were very conservative. They didn't take shots downfield. But what we saw was what where we left off last year, Chris, and that is this Kansas City offense is daunting, has a million weapons, and the running back at LSU looked sensational last night.
No, Clyde Edwards-Helaire stole the show. Rick always talks about don't be the show, steal the show. Well, that was the rookie running back for the Chiefs last night. I mean, being able to have that kind of debut where you go for a 138 and a touchdown, and you saw that explosive play that he had at the beginning of the third quarter. Like, it's just what he's going to bring to that offense is just going to make them that much harder to stop. I mean, when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, when you're playing them, you don't have any margin for error. And I know you talked about how you didn't necessarily love Billy O's game plan. I thought the game plan was solid. They just didn't execute. Like, in the first half, you saw that they were trying to shorten the game. They were going to use David Johnson and Duke Johnson. They were going to shorten the game as much as they could with the running game, keep the clock moving, control time of possession, and then try to take advantage of opportunities when you worked it in the plus territory. And then defensively, their D coordinator, Anthony Weaver, he was going to stay in those two high coverage looks and force Pat Mahomes to check the ball down, force the Chiefs to run the football and to drive the length of the field and be patient. And I thought that the Chiefs did that, but when you have opportunities like what Eric Murray had at the beginning of the second quarter when he was diving to try to intercept that ball, you got to take advantage of them because the Chiefs' offense isn't going to give you many of them. When you get those chances, you got to cash in. The same with your offense. When you get opportunities, you got to make the most of them, and then you got to have better clock management, Bill O'Brien, at the end of the first half. You can't leave that kind of time on the clock and give them that kind of field position after the missed field goal where they can set themselves up to put points on the board before you go into the half. You can't do that. But again, it comes down to the Chiefs being really, really good, having that kind of talent to go along with the scheme and the play calling. They're just going to be a tough out. I honestly don't know how you stop this team. If it's not by negative plays in the ways of sacks and turnovers, I don't know how you stop that team.
Dave, you said tough to stop?
I mean, yeah, impossible.
Maybe impossible to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Chris made a good point. I mean, when you go up against Kansas City, we all realize they're the most explosive offense in the National Football League. Yeah. What you're trying to do is limit possessions, right? Like, if you can control time of possession, you give yourself an opportunity. If the Chiefs can run the football the way they ran the football last night, mm-hmm, and win the time of possession battle, you can't beat them. You're not going to beat them.
No, and how much did it pain you? I mean, I was thinking of you last night. What am I going to say? How much did it pain you this? Do you know what it is?
What, that we picked the game and we won? What?
No, that Kelechi Osemele looked like...
my God, I'm so glad. Dude, if I heard his name one more time.
I'm watching that, and they're making a point. Like, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, like, what a pickup. They just picked him up off the scrap heap. He was with the Jets, and now he's available. And look, they're running behind him, and he's physical, and he's dominant. I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. This guy was horrendous for the Jets last season.
I just can't believe Rick said it hurts to watch Kelechi Osemele play. How about Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson? Because both of those guys could have been your quarterback.
Yeah.
And you took Jamal Adams, the guy that you eventually traded.
Yeah, but those guys, let's be honest, neither quarterback would be who they are today if the Jets had drafted them. They would have found a way to screw it up.
I don't know. With Pat Mahomes, I can see what you're saying. Not with Deshaun Watson. Not with Deshaun Watson. I just think he's that good.
Could you imagine how much better he could be, though? Feel like Deshaun. I feel like if you put Deshaun Watson in Pat Mahomes' situation, he'd be even better than he is now.
He would be.
Oh, 100%. And he's already a top five quarterback.
He's
one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL with Bill O'Brien as his head coach / general manager.
You know what I was pleased with last night? I thought for the most part, I thought the game was pretty good. Like, we had this conversation of how it's just going to go out there and it's going to be awful football. There's going to be a million flags. Like, I thought for the most part that was pretty good football last night.
Yeah, I think we were looking at two pretty good teams. Like, everybody's talking about how the Texans are going to take this huge step back. I just don't see that. Like, to me, the Texans are still a club that can compete to win their division and be in the postseason. So, I just, you know what? It was really good football, Dave. It was. Like, without preseason, no games, you know, no OTAs in the offseason, to have the opportunity to watch that kind of performance, I thought it was pretty solid. Not a sloppy football game, not a ton of penalties. I thought it was an entertaining ball game to watch.
Now, I agree with you that I think the Texans are a pretty decent team. Have you seen their schedule the next 3 weeks, though? So they're 0-1. They host Baltimore, go to Pittsburgh, and then play Minnesota. they could very easily be a team looking at 0-4.
They could be, although I don't look at Pittsburgh as as tough of an out as those other three teams. I just don't. And until they prove to me that they got a healthy quarterback that's capable of getting back to what we've known him to be in his prime, then I'm not gonna crown the Steelers just yet. Now maybe maybe that's the Baltimore Raven in me talking. I don't know. I don't know if I'm exactly being objective, but I always look for opportunities to throw shade at the Steelers.
The one thing I will say about last night, and there weren't. I mean, you're right. There were. I expected more penalties. Tackling wasn't great. I mean, that clearly is something that will improve as the season goes on. Just because you haven't done it yet.
A lot of footballs last night.
But that's the thing that concerns me about Houston. Offensive line still isn't very good. And on top of it, Duke Johnson's already hurt. David Johnson's been hurt the last couple of years.
Well, he got hurt last night too, right? Didn't they take him out of the game with a hand injury and he finally went back in? Yeah.
Yeah, he had a wrist thing, yeah.
Will Fuller's always hurt. Brandon Cooks is a concussion away from missing the entire season. So, I mean, those.
But he looked fast last night.
He looked real fast.
Brandon Cooks and David Johnson, they both looked like they got some juice. I don't know what Bill O'Brien has been telling them, but they. Listen, man. The Texans, I see what they want to do. I see the offense that they want to become. I mean, when you look at their receivers, it ain't a bad receiving group now. I mean, you got Cooks, you got Fuller, you got Cobb. I mean, you got some pieces. That you got Kenny.
Did we?
Yeah, but
Chris?
I think
too. So I mean, listen, you don't have a DeAndre Hopkins. I get that, but it's not like Deshaun Watson is devoid of talent in the skill position core.
No, yeah. Not by any stretch. They still have talent. I got to tell you, though, watching the Chiefs last night, and you said it, Rick, about how good their offense is, it's hard-pressed to see them not putting up 12, 13, even more wins this year. Like, that's going to be one of your top two or three teams in football. They picked
up
right
30,
where they look. They're terrific.
They scored 31 unanswered points.
Yep.
I mean, and if DeMarcus Robinson didn't have hands like feet, I mean, it could have been worse.
Terrible.
That dude's got brutal hands.
I thought there was also a chance for the Texans when they had that Bernardrick McKinney interception in the end zone at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Like Brad Roby, that was a brutal DPI penalty. That was brutal. I mean,
that wasn't a great call.
You could have kept them from putting points on the board. And at 24-7, you still don't like the Texans' chances, but at least you could make it a game. Like if you can get that possession, you steal that, you keep them from getting points, and you got the ball on the 25-yard line, driving out. Like at least you got a shot. You know what
but
I'm saying?
But you were right with the game change at the end of the first half. It was, what, 14-7,
yes.
And the Texans are going down to put points on the board. They missed that field goal. They come down, you know, Kansas City scores, and that's really done. At that
but
point,
here's the thing. Your offense
is really
has to help
done.
You play defense when you're playing the Chiefs, though, doesn't
it? Of course.
It? Your offense has to help you. So Bill O'Brien calling three consecutive pass plays and all of them being incompletions, that's absolutely ridiculous, especially when you know you got the ball in field goal territory. You got the ball on the 33-yard line. You call three straight passes. You don't think to yourself once, hey, maybe I should run a little bit of this clock down. Maybe this might be a little bit too much time to leave on the clock because you know what? If my kicker does miss a 50-yard shot, they're going to get the ball right at midfield. There's a chance that Pat Mahomes and that explosive Chiefs offense can work it into field goal territory. I mean, listen, if it's a one-possession game at halftime, if you tell Bill O'Brien before the start of that game, it's going to be a one-possession game at halftime, do you think he would sign up and take that? He absolutely would.
He'd probably trade your first-round pick for it.
Probably. But in that moment, you can't have that kind of lapse as a head coach. But that's always been a thing that we've talked about with Bill O'Brien. His game management, it leaves a lot to be desired. Now, from X's and O's, I think he's a solid coach. But his game management and his roster management
are both awful.
They're awful.
His GM skills are absolutely brutal.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be completely honest. Bill O'Brien, he leaves a lot to be desired, right? Especially as a GM. But if the Kansas City Chiefs and Pat Mahomes, and I think Andy Reid said it best after the game, like he almost makes it look so easy where they call a play, and the one thing that people would kind of point to as a criticism of Pat Mahomes is he willing to be patient? You know, will he check the ball down? If he's going to be willing to do what he did last night and go 11, 12 plays, 16 plays, take what the defense has given him, I mean, this is...
Well, what happens when Hilaire gets into the passing game? I don't think he had any catches last night. What happens when they start throwing the ball to him? That offense is... they are terrifying.
But, Dave, in terms of game plan, I think that's how you have to play defense against the Chiefs.
Make him go 12 plays, 70 yards, because
you know they can get explosive plays. You got to stay too high. You got to keep two high safeties. A lot of cover two looks, and you force them to check the ball down. You force them to run the football. Don't give them any quick strikes. You can't. Because you know they'll beat you that way. Like, at least you have a chance of keeping the game close if you play defense like the Texans tried to play defense in the first half. But again, you got to come up with negative plays. Like Jacob Martin getting that sack on the first possession, like, you got to have stuff like that. You got to be able to come up with the interceptions, the strip sacks, the fumbles. You got to do that. If you don't get any takeaways, if you don't force any negative plays, I don't see how you're going to beat that Chiefs offense.
Yeah, I don't think you are. But even we're going to see a lot of what we saw last night this season.
But Dave, even the play design. I mean, you watch, I mean, between, you know, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. I mean, that Travis Kelce touchdown.
Oh.
I mean, the play design, and then
the screen to Kelce, where everybody runs wide and they dump it right back to him in the middle of the field, and it's wide open for like a 20-yard
game. Where they went, where they faked the screen to the right, they faked the screen to the left, and then you had the tight end screen right in the middle.
There was no one near him up the middle.
Yep.
Yeah.
The dude can make every single throw, man. Every single, the one that, I mean, his best throw of the night would have been the one that got dropped by DeMarcus Robinson, where he's moving to his left, he's across his body.
That was a dime.
And he throws a dime. And poor DeMarcus Robinson just takes it right off the chops because he can't catch it. But
there was another one where he was in the red zone, Rick. He was sliding to his left, and he threw back across his body, and he hit the receiver on the back shoulder. I mean, he placed the ball the only place where the receiver could get it, in between coverages, and the receiver dropped it. I forgot. I think it was DeMarcus Robinson on that one, too.
Yeah, I'm sure
But,
it
I mean,
was.
like it was a situation where he was throwing it. It's like, how is this guy capable of having that kind of accuracy? It's unbelievable.
He's different level.
Like moving to your left and throwing across your body as a right-handed quarterback, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah, he's different level. Now, if there's a game, someone's betting on it. Stream Better Days, the new Mike Greenberg-hosted series about epic sports betting stories told by the bettors themselves. Stream new episodes every week only on ESPN+. Plus. All right, you know we're doing a frenzy in the 10 o'clock hour, correct?
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, 10:15. So RJ Bell, 10 o'clock. 10:15 frenzy, 10:30 Feinbaum, Jets talk. Are we making picks this year, or is that out the window?
You know how I feel about it. I
you
quit
don't
fantasy
picks this year.
No, I mean, if you guys want to do it, I mean, you still have to pay off your bet. But I mean, if you want to do it, I'll do it.
I mean, I feel we like want to know, right? Have to do picks though. Like, how can we be a sports talk radio show and we don't do picks?
Yeah, we probably should do quick picks.
But Dave and I want to know, right?
We have to do picks.
When you stop, we're not 1-0.
Did I thought we picked? You asked me yesterday, and I picked the Chiefs.
Yeah, I said, who do you like? And you know what? I'd be 1-0 also, but we're not 1-0.
I'm 1-0 in my mind.
You're
I'm
not.
No,
you
know, no, you can't count that one.
If I say who do you like in the game, you say I think Kansas City wins by double digits. You didn't lock that in as one of your picks. No, you're not 1-0.
I mentally locked it in.
You're deceptive, Chris. How about Joe Judge yesterday? Huh? Losing his mind at practice, sending the media out so he could undress his team.
Yeah, he's channeling his inner Bill Parcells with that one, isn't it? I mean, just trying to let the guys know that he's upset about something. I don't really know if it's him truly being upset about the practice or the preparation, Dave, as much as it is about effect and trying to make sure his guys are motivated going into week one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't – you know, we weren't there, so I guess we couldn't tell you what the tone of the practice was. But hearing about a coach doing something like that, I remember when Bill Parcells used to do that with us when I was with the Dallas Cowboys, and veteran players like Keyshawn Johnson and Terry Glenn and Jason Ferguson, guys that have been with him at other places, they said, like, listen, he's going to do some of this for effect. It's not necessarily that we're having a bad practice, but he just wants to make sure that we're motivated. In his mind, that's something that he feels like he has to do. Don't pay any attention to it. Don't let that bother you. Just continue to do what you're doing and get ready to play. Like, I can't judge Joe Judge, no pun intended, but I think that could be a little bit of what's at play here. Because to do something like this with the timing of it going into week one game, like, it just feels like that's the head coach trying to instill that level of urgency in his team because you're getting the regular season kicked off.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, that's reminding these guys about attention to detail and everything else. Make sure everyone's mentally where they need to be for this Monday night.
Look, I don't know if it's going to work or not with him, but for some reason, and I didn't feel this way with Shermer, and I didn't feel this way with McAdoo, I have this feeling that he's going to be a really good head coach at this level.
Well, I think he's going to be a good head coach, Dave, because he's going to trust the people that he has on his coaching staff. I mean, a part of being a good leader is being able to delegate responsibility and trusting Jason Garrett and trusting Patrick Graham to do their jobs as the offensive and defensive coordinators. I think that's a big part of it, man. It really is. Because as a head coach, you can't do everything. You can't micromanage. You got to trust the people that you have in place and be able to bring out the best in them. And so you do want to make sure that there's accountability throughout the organization with both players and coaches. But you got to trust people to be able to do their jobs. And it sounds like he's willing to do that.
Yeah, well, that's what any good CEO would do. All right, let's go. Andy from Merrick on a Friday. I imagine you're going football heavy today, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Yeah, in watching last night's football game and the remarkable talent of those two quarterbacks, it had me thinking about some quarterbacks of the past. So I have a four-pack of quarterback questions for the three of you.
Okay.
Starting with, this quarterback had the most passing yards in the 2000s, that is, from the year 2000 to 2009.
Oh, God. You think Favre, guys?
2000 to 2009. Is Drew Brees in that conversation, Dave? I know he missed that one season, though.
Yeah, I would say no, because if you miss a year, I don't know how you could be.
Yeah.
What was McNabb's time frame?
This is the first question, so maybe we just don't overthink it. I mean,
should we go Favre?
Andy's being real quiet, too, which I don't necessarily love either.
Usually he gives a hint.
You're overlooking a very obvious guy.
Is it? It can't be.
Is it Peyton?
Is it Peyton?
Is it Peyton?
It is Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
How about for the 1990s? Can you tell me which quarterback had the most passing yards for that decade?
Ooh, the 1990s.
Don't overthink it.
Don't overthink it.
The 90s Montana?
Montana, you think?
No. He said don't overthink it. Do we
Marino?
Go Montana? Marino, Montana.
Yeah, Marino.
Is it Brett Favre? Is he in that one?
No, he's being quiet on that one.
Yeah, Favre drafted in the early 90s and didn't really get started for a couple years there. You named him so far. Can you come up with it?
Oh, so we've thrown him at Montana?
Come on, Dave. We named it. Come on.
Steve. No, we didn't say Steve Young. So
it's not
what
Steve
did we
Young.
Say?
We said Elway. So, we said Montana, and
no,
you said Marino.
Said
did you say Marino?
Marino.
I said Elway.
You said Elway?
So let's go. The 90s?
Why do I want to? I feel like.
Should we go with Marino or no?
But he had a season where he played only like five or six games.
Is it Favre? I mean, is it Favre?
No, it's not Favre.
What about Elway?
Very quiet
right
again,
now.
Andy.
Andy, you're killing me right
Lock
now.
Lock integrity, boys. Let's get an answer.
Elway retired after 98, right? After the 98 season?
Yeah, after they won the second Super Bowl. Yeah.
The answer is this man retired after the 99 season.
It's Marino.
It's Marino.
Daniel Constantine Marino Jr. Yeah.
Gotta be Marino, yeah.
All right, most passing yards in the 80s.
Oh, for God's sake.
Again, don't
overthink
it.
I hate these questions.
This should be very obvious.
Fouts?
Is that Montana?
It's got to be Montana.
That's what I'm about to say.
And round it out. This University of Georgia product had the most passing yards for the
1970s.
1970s.
New York flavor to him.
Kenny Anderson?
No.
No.
New York flavor to him.
New York flavor.
Seventies.
Bunch of Super Bowl appearances.
Super Bowl appearances.
No wins.
Fran Tarkenton?
Francis Asbury Tarkenton.
Asbury?
See, my man.
Yes, right. Sir.
We struggled there today.
Guys, you got it all.
We got to the finish line.
Have a great
line,
weekend. Stay healthy, and let's go, Islanders.
You need that desperately. All right.
That was limping to the finish line.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You know, like the guy who dehydrates and he sees the finish line, but he's on the ground and everyone's running past him?
That was us.
That's what that was today, in fact.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.